So a quick summary of a Shem Mishmuel for Parshas Vayishlach. I apologize if I'm a little winded. I just landed after a 7-hour delay from my flight from Israel. I wasn't really on the plane, but I was just getting from place to another. So 7 hours later than I thought I'd get here. I just wanted to summarize the Shem Mishmuel. Two Shem Mishmuels in Parshas Vayishlach. One is a little more straightforward, but Chassidus is always looking for not just codes in the lives of our avos for Am Yisrael's future, but particularly for Am Yisrael's future towards the latter part of the 19th century, 20th century, 18th century, because that was the theater they operated in and the types of people they were talking with and to and trying to rebuild their spirit. So the fact that Yaakov gets maimed or injured by the Malach while they're fighting, and of course the Malach is Sarah Shalesev according to Chazal, and we don't know he's a Malach according to the Pasuk, but Chazal fill us in that he was a Malach. That's all very iconic because we are facing off against Esav, against Rome, against Western civilization, which was inspired by Rome both religiously and culturally and scientifically and technologically and politically. So that's all nothing new in the Shem Mishmuel. What is new is a very interesting point I never thought of it is that this and of course the fact that Esav damages Yaakov and maims him is also the fact that in our struggle with Rome and our struggle with Western civilization and our face-off against Christianity, we've also been injured and damaged and maimed. But what's interesting, he notes, is that this all happens during the struggle, and even after the even after Yaakov is injured, he still triumphs. And the angel, it was Ish, forces him, Shalcheni, please let me go, please release me so that I can go on my way. And for the Shem Mishmuel, I'll just try to remember what he says. He says that it shows that even when Yaakov is injured, is in a lowly state, has been weakened, still they still have the power to overcome Esav. And that's something I ever noticed. I always thought that the injury happened towards the end, and then it was more or less a stalemate, an armistice. Yaakov had incarcerated this man and or this angel, and this angel Sarsha Lesef and maimed Yaakov, and they said, let's call it even though Yaakov seems to have the upper hand. But it's sequential, it's chronological. That Yaakov is injured and damaged, and then he continues to triumph over the angel, which for the Shem Mishmuel indicates Am Yisrael's continuing triumphant capacities and capabilities, even when they're in a lowly state, as they were in the 19th century, as they were in the 20th century, certainly during the Holocaust, which, of course, the Shem Mishmuel didn't live to see. The second interesting Shem Mishmuel, which I'm still processing, and like I said, I don't really have the mind right now to process because I'm exhausted, but I just wanted to get this out, is the Medrash. The Medrash says that the reason that Parshas Vayishlach ends with all of Esav's genealogy is because it highlights how many Mamzerim Esav produced. And I have a Chumash in front of me, I'm really in transit, but they're marrying each other's mothers and wives become mothers and mothers become wives, and it's very incestuous. Remember correctly, the Medrash says there were three Mamzerim or four Mamzerim. I don't have the list in front of me, but there are a lot of Mamzerim in Esav. We all believe it's to highlight the difference between Yaakov's building a bayis, Parshas Vayishlach, building a family, Zerah Kulo Kodesh, and Esav's promiscuous lawlessness, sexual anarchy, and marry whoever you want, and they don't really have families. They have militant generals, but no real families. But the Medrash sees this as more iconic. The Medrash feels that this is a way to uncover the real Esav. The real Esav presents as a righteous person, as a virtuous person, as a good person, but by the time Vayishlach concludes, we know the real story, and the Mamzerus is just indicative of who the real person was. Lashon of the Medrash is Lama Gilisius Mistarv Bishvil Legalos Esav Mamzerus Shebineihem. Now, what does this mean to the Shem Mishmuel, and what does this mean to me by reading the Shem Mishmuel? So, for the Shem Mishmuel, who speaks in Kabbalistic codes, Esav is someone who presents righteousness, but internally is really an enemy, internally is really wicked. And that's why the Chazal compared Esav to a chazir, to a pig, because a pig shows off its split hoofs, tries to demonstrate, tries to announce its kosher nature, but deep down doesn't chew its cud, and internally doesn't have the same righteousness that it professes to have. Now, Shem Mishmuel detects this also in how we know Esav was a Rasha. If you look at the text, there's very little in the text itself. He's a hunter. He's close with his father. don't really see the true Esav. Chazal fill in the blanks. You know, they had Sayed, it's Sad Brios Befiv. He wasn't just a hunter, but he was a manipulative, exploitative, trickster who tried to entrap people. Vayivas Esav Esav Bechora, Chazal tell us what was really behind the scenes. So this is really fascinating because it's very modern. As we recall it, the Shem Yishmol notes that the form and the style fits the substance. The substance of Esav's identity is hidden wickedness, hidden lawlessness, hidden decadence. He presents externally as someone who's righteous, and the text follows that by suppressing the wickedness and presenting the righteousness, even though the wickedness is internal. And this is the time for the Torah to give us our great reveal. The Mamzerus reveals who he really was. Hashem Yishmol says that's why Yosef is tasked specifically with defeating Esav, because Yosef is also someone whose internal righteousness is more quiet. He's a child of Rachel, and Rachel is known as the Tzanua, based in the Gemara and Megillah. She was Lokech Pelech Hashtika. She was quiet, especially during the moment that she was swapped out for Leah. And of course, Tznius doesn't just mean how you're dressing, but Tznius means not drawing attention to yourself, not seeing yourself as a center of attention, giving way to someone else. So it's the particular power of Yosef, because he has this internal righteousness, so he can face off against Esav, who has this internal wickedness. So that's all Kabbalistic stacking up. Internal, external, let's have the internal tzaddik stack up against the internal Rasha, even though maybe some of the other brothers may have been more equipped to. Now, I'm thinking to myself, what does this mean? What does it mean to have an internal rishos? What does it mean historically? What does it mean psychologically? Why is that more powerful? Why is that more dangerous? Well, I know what it means historically. Historically, we don't see Rome and Western civilization in the same way we saw the barbaric Babylonians or the decadent, self-indulgent Persians or the heavily Hellenistic Greeks. The Romans, and now there was a famous debate that took place between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, how we should view the Roman accomplishments. Rabbi Yehuda viewed them favorably, Rabbi Shimon viewed them disfavorably, therefore we had to run and hide in a cave. So all of a sudden, Rome is a very different type of cultural encounter, where externally they're progressive, they're scientific, they're enlightened, they're liberal, they're building political democracies, culture. But internally, there are forces at work as part of Western civilization that, ironically, even more dangerous. Even religiously, the shift towards Christianity is a welcome shift because it's a shift in paganism to monotheism, then all of a sudden, 1,000 years after Christianity, it turns anti-Semitic and vicious and cruel and bloody. So understand what it means politically, historically. I don't yet fully grasp what it means psychologically. What does it mean that if internally you are a wicked person, but externally you are seen as a righteous person? Well, it's more manipulative, it's harder to defeat, it's harder to detect. But what makes internal wickedness more powerful, more potent, more dangerous than external wickedness is that it's real and deep rather than expressed. Because I believe that everything Kabbalistic is also true psychologically and experientially. And Kabbalah is just one higher level to our experience, our experientialism. So, of course, the Shem Yishmol doesn't really describe that. He's dealing in the world of Kabbalah, where Pnimius means more dangerous, more powerful. Doesn't say why. Same token, why is internal righteousness of Yosef, quiet righteousness, in a way it's more powerful because it comes with tznius and it comes with internal silent power, but just it fascinates me. I don't really have the full presence of mind right now to ponder it, but I think even taken on its own, two fascinating Shem Yishmuls. One is that Yaakov is injured and still defeats. Jewish people may be harmed, but they still supersede and they surpass Esav. Number two, Esav is like that pig who flashes his split hoofs, but internally doesn't chew his cud, who flashes his righteousness, but internally it's wicked. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to reveal that by describing his mamzer, which to me is also interesting. How does mamzer, why is that the area that Esav can't succeed in suppressing? He can suppress everything else, he can fool the world, but you can't fool the world when it comes to your family, when it comes to raising mamzerim. It's also something I'm thinking, why is the mamzer the vehicle by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Esav's true but hidden identity? Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom.